All right, I'm sitting here with two-time. Well, Jimmy's retiring, so you can steal the whole time thing now. Two-time IndyCar champion, though, Joseph Newgarden. How are you?
I'm very good. It's good to be back in Detroit, as always, kicking off some ticket sales for 2020 Detroit Grand Prix.
I have to ask a couple quick questions. Number one, when you drove the Roval in Charlotte,
yeah,
were you pushing that car a little harder than you were supposed to?
It was a beautiful compromise of I was trying to be aggressive, but also cautious. You know, it's one of those deals where you don't want to go too easy. Otherwise, the NASCAR guys are going to make fun of you.
Right.
But also, you don't want to go too hard and put it in the wall, because then they're definitely going to make fun of you. So there was kind of a tiptoeing around of like, okay, I'm going to push a little bit, but not too hard.
With Logano laughing, he was saying like you were upshifting when they would be braking.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I had to tell people it's such a different form of racing. You know, you can't compare the two cars. I'm a huge NASCAR guy. I love NASCAR, but you know, just because an Indy car is quicker than a stock car doesn't really mean anything. It's a different race car. What I will say though is I think it was fun because what that got to do was expose people that have maybe never seen an Indy car in person.
Right.
They got to see one, and I think they thought it was really cool and really interesting. And I just love that, you know, potentially one day we could have a mix between the two, where you come to a race weekend, you can see a NASCAR event and an IndyCar event. And I think that would be good for the fans.
Could you visualize when you were there having 22, 24 cars on the track simultaneously? How would the racing be?
Yeah, I've tried to envision it. You know, the big thing for me was just trying to understand was there an issue with the tire compounds meshing? You know, when I took the pace car out, I mean, there was Goodyear rubber that was just gunked on the track, and I was kind of concerned that the Firestone tires that we run on wouldn't maybe mesh with that, and would that cause a problem for a race weekend? And honestly, it wasn't a big deal. It was like, you know, totally not a big deal. It'd be a normal race weekend. Yeah, we'll have to clean off their rubber and put ours down, but that's no different than what we do at any other racetrack. So I think it can work. You know, could there be 24 cars on there, and would it be a good race? Kind of hard to say. You know, when there's one car, you sort of get an idea of what it runs like, but until you get a simulation of 24 cars on track, you don't know. You don't know if it's going to race good or not.
Do we use, and I apologize for not knowing this, I know NASCAR this year they were using that material where they could put in a second groove on ovals.
Yeah.
So do we use anything like that in IndyCar?
Yeah, I forget the name. It's like PJ something.
Yeah.
PJ2 or something like that. Yeah, it's just like this like adhesive-y glue,
right,
you know, that creates a tacky surface. And we don't use any of that. No, IndyCar has not experimented or used any of that stuff. Typically we don't need it, but you know, the places where you know we could stand to be better are short ovals. You know, Iowa's awesome. We have two lane racetrack there.
Right.
The one place that we probably needed to be a little better about lane usage was Gateway. You know, you go to Gateway in St. Louis and it's hard to build that second lane. And you know, so you end up following guys a little bit too much instead of getting up in that second groove and finding space. That's why NASCAR runs it. You know, they run it to give people a better advantage at one lane or the other, or you know, help a lane out that's maybe not as good. But yeah, we don't run it. I don't know if we're going to in the future, but we haven't experimented with it.
How was the windscreen?
I liked it. It's funny. It felt normal after 10 minutes.
How quiet is it in the car, though?
It's very quiet.
Is that weird?
It's the radio's a lot easier to hear. It's not crazy quiet. You know, you're still in a 750 horsepower Indy car,
right?
And it's strapped to your back, so it's not like it's quiet. But it compared to what the noise level was before, it's down. You know, you probably cut it, I would say 40%, which is it's a significant chunk. But it's really the wind noise that you lose. You know, there's with the IndyCar before, there, you have so much hitting your face. You know, whether it's there's my clap. You know, there's for audio right there. whether it's the exhaust coming off the car in front of you, or it's just the rubber getting kicked up on the track, or it's the wind itself. There's so much hitting your face and your helmet, and that's all gone now. So that's a difference. And you know, it wasn't a big deal. I think a lot of people go, well, is it going to be okay? Are you going to be able to race still? Yeah, it's going to be fine. It's just going to be one of those things that 2 years from now, people are going to go, what? I never even thought you guys ran with that windshield. It's like people, it's just going to become normal in a couple years from now.
And I think as much you guys, I've always said that IndyCar is an open wheel racing. It's like driving a backwards pickup truck. Because in a pickup truck, when you drive, especially here in the winter in Michigan, all your weight's up front and it's nothing in the rear. For you, all your weight's in the rear and nothing up front.
Yeah.
Having a little extra weight up front is probably not a bad thing when it comes to balancing out the car.
It's really not. Our weight distribution was pretty rearward. And it more so on this specific car that we're driving an IndyCar now. IndyCars are not always super rearward on weight. You know, I'm talking like 41%. 41%, that's pretty rearward.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, normally IndyCars have been closer in past to 50-50, you know, or 48%, so a lot more forward than what they are now. And this screen doesn't, you know, doesn't push it crazy far forward, but, it you know, it's about a percent and a half, I think, is what the number is. So it what it helps is stability. You know, the more weight you get on the nose of the car, the more stable it is on the entry phases. So when you start turning into the corner, especially that Indy, you know, IMS, the car's just a lot more stable. It doesn't want to snap. You don't get that pendulum effect from the race car anymore.
Right.
So that will change, and the setups are going to have to change. Because of that, you know, we're going to have to figure out, all right, what's the best way to run the car now? So 2020 is going to be interesting. All the setups that we just developed over the last couple of years, they're going to get thrown out the window.
So in theory, can you go in deeper with this car?
I think it's more confidence-inspiring.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to go in deeper because it's just a touch heavier. You know, I think our weight's gone up about 50 pounds with everything all included. And that will come back down. You know, when we introduce the new Indy car in the future, when it's more integrated, the weight will come back down. But with the temporary small increase, you know, you'll probably lose just a tick of performance. So your entry speed will come down just a touch, but your confidence level will go up. You know, you'll feel so much more confident to attack the race car, and I think that may invite a little bit more aggression in the racing.
Speaking of aggression in racing, what is as a driver in a very successful team, obviously with Team Penske, what is your take on what's going on with Ferrari right now?
I think it's good. It's provided good entertainment for all of us.
Well, yeah.
You know, Ferrari, they're probably not happy about it. And I think, depending on who you talk to, you've probably got a Vettel fan or a Leclerc fan. And, you know, they don't like it, either side, because they want their guy to be the number one. And It's just tough. You know, F1 has this environment where you get two alpha racing drivers together, and it's really tough to coexist. You know, and I don't know why that is. I think it's the pressure of that environment in F1. It's very different than IndyCar. You know, IndyCar, you get this incredible rivalry and competitiveness. It's you're not lacking that. Like, we all want to kick each other's butts.
Right.
But there's a respect there in IndyCar that I don't think you have in Formula 1. In Formula 1, it's so cutthroat. I mean, it is just like you will do anything, you know, even something just shameful to win, and you don't have that in IndyCar. Everyone has a great level of respect. They want to be fair. They want to be the best. You know, you still want to be, you know, playing a game of chess. I still want to beat you no matter what, but I'm going to do it the right way. And I just think you lack a little bit of that in F1. So it creates this tense environment where in Ferrari right now, it's two alphas and they just don't know how to get along. And I think the team's in a tough spot because they want two alphas to push each other, but they don't know how to manage it. And it's hard to comment and say what they should do because I'm not in their environment. I don't know exactly what they're doing. I don't have all the facts. But I know it's a tough thing for them to manage right now.
Well, and now going to that, you and Alexander, obviously, I mean, the rivalry between you guys, it's great to watch as a fan. When you see him racing in Baja, is that part of your head? You're like, oh, I want to go do that too.
Oh, yeah. I have, you know, I think it's really cool Rossi's running these other races. You know, I think there's a lot of us that want to do that. You know, unfortunately right now, it's not perfectly lined up or possible to run other events, but I hope in the future I can get myself in a place where, you know, in addition to my IndyCar duties, I can run some other events. I think that 24 hours of Daytona would be awesome. Really, all the endurance sports car events in North America have been on my list, you know, like Petit. And then being able to go, like, run at Le Mans specifically would be amazing. So I'm all for it. I want to do some NASCAR events one day.
Is Blaney going to give you his car for at least to get some time on a track?
I hope so. I mean, I know he wants to drive my car, so maybe we could do a seat swap at one point. But, you know, getting to run, like, the Bristol Night Race would be amazing. That's, like, a bucket list of mine.
That's the one. Okay.
That's the one, yeah. I mean, I'd run some other events, but Bristol would be probably number one for me. So, yeah, I have big ambitions. I just don't have the setup necessary right now. And you know, I'm not saying that I can't do it in the future. It's just not in the cards for me right now.
You and I have talked about this before, and it's something I appreciate. I candid you are about it. When you drive the last 10 laps of a race, to me, I've always wondered, like, and I asked Simon the same question. You guys train, your physical is next to none. I mean, you train so hard, and even mentally. But how do you mentally train, like, for Laguna Seca, for those last five laps? The drain, I don't think, as a fan, I can comprehend how stressful that really is.
Yeah, it is. It is hard to comprehend just because, you know, it's hard to simulate it. You know, most people, they don't have something to compare that to. But it's the same as any other sport. You know, if you look at a, you know, you look at a Super Bowl performance.
Tom Brady.
Yeah, I always like using them as an example. Yeah. But, you know, Tom Brady, he's pretty clutch. He's pretty clutch in the right situations that you need to be. But, you know, you take a Super Bowl situation, you're down to 2 minutes to go, and you have to score a touchdown to tie the game, you know, to keep this thing going and to keep yourself alive. Well, that pressure, or even vice versa, say you're a touchdown ahead,
right,
and you've got them at the 50-yard line, and they're coming, and they're right on your heels, and there's 2 minutes to go, and you just got to hold them off. You know, that pressure that all of those individuals are feeling, it's the same as it is in a race car. It's a different sport, it's a different environment, but the type of pressure that you're dealing with, it's the same thing as trying to win an event or trying to win a championship when it comes down right to the wire and you can't lose any more positions, or you have to pass someone to get that position to win the championship. You know, whatever the situation is, those pressures are very similar across all of sports. And I think it's something that, you know, everyone trains differently on how to make the most of that pressure. But a lot of it comes with experience. You know, that's why experience pays in sports. The more that you go through those type of experiences and learn from them and practice them in real time, I think the better you get at it. And you can't replicate that. So you have to go through them personally to get better at them in the future.
So in part, what we saw in Victory Lane when you won was almost like a mental flush of all that stress and everything that had built up, knowing you had the points lead, knowing it was really yours to lose for the better part of what? A month? 2 months?
Yeah, I think it was more difficult this year because of that, because of the fact that it was ours to lose. You know, we led the championship essentially all year from, you know, right from the start, the very first race. And I felt like we were the deserving champions. I felt like our team had executed really well all year. And in all fairness, if double points wasn't involved, the championship would have already been decided.
Right.
So the double points, that it added this intensity and this pressure that, you know, all this work that you do all year, it could be taken away right at the last minute.
Knowing it's at the end like that. You have to deal with that.
Yeah, and it just really ramped everything up. And, you know, it was a different place. We were in a defensive position, which I'm not used to being in. Normally I'm in the offensive. And so the defensive position was a lot more stressful this time around than being offensive.
Last question, Joseph Newgarden with us. Detroit Grand Prix tickets are on sale now. Always fun track. I know Detroit as a track has arrived because the F1 guys were complaining about how bumpy Austin was, and a bunch of you guys were out there going, really? Come to Detroit just once. You guys were all giving them crap about that.
Well, it's character, right? You know, like we talk about it all the time, but when a track is bumpy, we call it character. And we personally like it. You know, we like when a track is difficult. And, you know, normally when it's a bumpy track, those bumps change every year. You know, they either intensify or maybe a couple of them got fixed. And it's just part of the engineering process of every year trying to get the most out of that particular weekend. And so it was funny, you know, when they were running at COTA and they thought the track was too bumpy and, you know, it wasn't up to their standard. We thought that was just hilarious. You know, we call that racing. That's what we call it.
I was laughing, too, because of the guys, like, when they milled the backstretch here at Belle Isle, everyone's like, oh, they've really made a huge difference. And all the IMSA guys come in here going, like, it's the same. It's the same. Have you noticed a difference in the evolution of the track, or is it pretty much is what it is?
Oh, no. The track has evolved a lot, in a good way. You know, it's been resurfaced recently, and the back straight was greatly improved. You know, there's parts of the track that are really bumpy, which are fine. You just leave them bumpy, and it's part of the nature of a corner. There's some parts that you want smooth, though, for good racing. You know, like the back straights, for instance. You don't want to have too many high bumps in the back straight, because those are passing zones. You want people, when they're on the straightaway, to be able to pass each other. And, right. Oh, I can't go into this line, because if I hit that line, you know, it's going to break suspension or something like that. So they've done a really good job at the Grand Prix here of making sure where it needs to be really put together and smooth, they have that. But where it's, you know, where it doesn't matter as much, it's pretty bumpy and it's tough to figure out.
Good luck at Indy this year, too. I got a good feeling about you this year.
We'll see. You never know. You know, there's
too many variables. There's too many variables in that race. It feels like to me as a fan, again, I'm as a fan, you guys have almost too much time to prepare for that race.
Yeah, and I think it feels that way when you lose. You know, you go...
Oh, seriously.
Yeah, you go there and you if it doesn't work out on race day, you go, why did they give us all this time? to finish eighth, you know? Right. And you're like, man, we had too much time. Why didn't we just have 3 or 4 days? But if you win it, if, you know, it all doesn't matter then. You know, then it's great. Everything's great. So Indy's awesome just because you never know. You just never know if it's going to work out that year or not.
Joseph, you're the best. Thank you, bud.
Thank you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.